Hey there, I'm Amanda, a Southern mama with big city sensibilities. I'm the girl that took a daydream and built a profitable virtual assistant business all in the middle of a global pandemic. Now, I work from home alongside some of the biggest bloggers and influencers while running a six-figure online business. I'm taking you along for the ride as we dive into business, marketing, strategy, and real life as a female entrepreneur. I'm all about simple, easy, actionable steps that get real results. This podcast is for the dreamers, the doers, and the go-getters. So let's kick imposter syndrome together and pull back the curtain on how to actually make money online. Get ready as we dig in, do the work, and tackle those big dreams I know you've been dreaming up. This is the Bold Business Podcast. Kim, welcome to the Bold Business Podcast. I am so excited that you're here. For those that may not know you, tell us a little bit about who you are, what your business is, and how you got started.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much, Amanda, for having me. I'm really excited to talk with you today. So my name is Kim, and I founded Copy with Kim. I am a launch copywriter for functional medicine providers, and I help them to launch courses and programs through research-driven copy. So writing their sales pages, sales email sequences, and also their content. So I decided to niche down to functional medicine providers because I was constantly getting sick when I was a teenager and relying on medications. But thankfully, due to functional medicine providers I listened to and making simple lifestyle changes, they were able to help me and I really wanted to give back to the community. I also have some background in corporate where I learned about the online course space. I know we'll get into that later, Amanda, but that's why I decided to combine my love of functional medicine, of courses, and of course, writing. I've loved writing as a child, and that's why I started my business.
My gosh, that's amazing. I think it's so cool that you loved writing as a child too, because that was something that I was super passionate about as well. And it's funny how a lot of times the things that we love as a child end up being the same things that we love as an adult, but we're able to sort of customize it to fit whatever our interest is. And I love that you were able to mesh that with your own personal background. And I'm sure, you know, you going through what you went through when you were a teenager and constantly being sick was so hard, but I'm sure being able to give back now, like, that's such a beautiful way for it to come full circle. So I know you mentioned that you started out in the corporate world and you moved into the online business world. Tell me about that transition and sort of how you discovered the online business world and really how you got started.
Oh, yeah, sure. So growing up, I had no idea that this online space, this online business space even existed. But I discovered copywriting thanks to a podcast episode that I was listening to. So I was in a corporate job working at a firefighter safety research institute. We basically created courses and training materials for firefighters to explain the science behind fighting fires for them. And while I was in this corporate role, I felt like I didn't really love what I was doing. It was also during the middle of the pandemic. So thanks to a podcast episode I listened to, also the Instagram algorithm worked in my favor and showed me a copywriting course. I discovered copywriting, met other copywriters, and was really inspired by them and decided to start my business.
That's amazing. And that's so cool that you were working for a firefighter corporate job. Like, I didn't even know that that was a thing. So that is really cool and also very niche. And it's funny because I think, you know, back to when I first started, and I feel like our paths are very parallel because same thing, middle of the pandemic, and I literally had no idea what even a virtual assistant was until I became one, basically, which is kind of how you are. You're like, I didn't even know copywriter was a thing, but here I am, like, you know, 2 years later, and I have this full-fledged business, and I think that that is just so cool. And it's also really cool that you heard about it from a podcast episode.
Oh, yeah. Everything feels kind of meta right now, Amanda. Like, yes, we're doing a podcast right now.
Exactly. Okay, so your specialty is obviously copywriting, but you also have this background in research too, where you mesh the two together. So I want to dive in because I feel like so many people, one, they are very intimidated by copy in general, but more specifically, email marketing and the copy that goes into that. And I know you're an expert in that. So tell me a little bit about just what your approach is to copywriting, how to even get started, let's say if you feel like you're having a roadblock, and what that looks like from an email marketing standpoint.
Oh yeah, that's such a great question, Amanda. And I definitely can see why people can feel intimidated and maybe even overwhelmed with email marketing, especially some people are saying like you need a lot of subscribers, or people may feel like they need a lot of subscribers to get started with email marketing. But I really like to keep things simple. So email's been around for a while, right? And in our personal lives, we normally use email to maybe send out an invitation to like a birthday party that we may have to friends, or maybe forward a newsletter. And we have this specific goal in mind when we're sending out emails. So I think when you want to start and dive into email marketing, it's really important to think about that big picture, that goal that you have in mind for email marketing. Is it to be able to maybe sell out one of your courses, share a service that you provide? Maybe you just want to provide some value through a monthly newsletter. So just keeping that big picture goal in mind, I think could help make email marketing not as overwhelming for somebody.
Yeah, I love that you said just think about one, it being simple, and two, that end goal in mind. So I think a lot of times when people think about email marketing, they think about like these really big companies, you know, whether it's a major retailer or a corporate company that they're getting emails from. And they're like, that's great for them. But you know, they have a team of hundreds of people supporting them. Like, how is this going to be able to serve my small audience? And I think what you said, which is really just thinking about the end goal in mind and how we can support that. So there's so many different components to email marketing. There's lead magnets and welcome series, and then there's the actual like sending the emails. Tell us a little bit about like those different elements. Which ones do people actually need, and where should they get started? Like if they've never even considered starting an email list and they're like, okay, you kind of convinced me, like I think I'm going to dive into this, but like where should I start? What advice would you give them?
Oh, yeah. So just going back to that analogy I had where we send emails maybe to share news, like inviting somebody to your birthday party, you need people to send emails to. So I tell people to start with their immediate circle. Maybe we did this when we started our businesses too. I know that I did this. But just letting people know that you're starting a newsletter and asking them if they want to be subscribed to it. Then after you share that news with your personal connections, I think it's important to create a lead magnet. And this is basically another word for a freebie or an opt-in. And it's basically something that provides value to your potential subscriber. And eventually they will give you their name and their email address, and they'll be able to download this lead magnet of yours.
Yeah. So I love a good lead magnet, and I feel like it's a great way to serve your audience too, because you're providing value up front in exchange for that person's name and email. And a lot of people I feel like can be intimidated by this because they think, oh gosh, like, you know, I don't want to be annoying or I don't want to be pushy, but I feel like this is a really great way to go about it from a service perspective. So whether it's a health coach and they're giving away 5 tips to lose 5 pounds this week, or 5 at-home recipes with 5 ingredients or less, or maybe it's a blogger that's 25 ways to style mom jeans. Really thinking, like you said, going back to the beginning and thinking about that person that's on the receiving end and how you can serve them well. So once they have that lead magnet set up, what would you advise them to do next? So they go in and they're like, okay, you know what? I know exactly who my person is that I want to serve. I've got my lead magnet set up. Now what do they do?
Oh yeah. And I love what you said too, Amanda. It's really important to keep that subscriber in mind and give them that quick win through your lead magnet, because you also don't want to overwhelm them through the lead magnet as well. But after you have that set up, I think it's important to tell them a little bit more about yourself. So one of my copywriting mentors, Marisa Corcoran, she kind of treats lead magnets like a first date. And then after you go on a first date with somebody, if things are going well, you want to get to know them more. And so when it comes to email, your subscriber really liked your lead magnet. They want to get to know you more, so they can do that through a welcome email sequence. I normally recommend when people are starting out to have a welcome email sequence that's 3 to 5 emails. This is what I normally recommend. You don't need to follow this exactly, but in the first email, I recommend that the call to action is to download your lead magnet. The second one would be to share more about you. So maybe 5 fun facts about you. You can include pictures, you can include a video, maybe some GIFs, but just make it fun and put your personality in it. And in this email, the call to action could be to follow you on social media or to check out your podcast or another piece of free content that you have. The third email that I recommend that you send out is an email where you're really empathizing with them and starting to build that trust even more with your subscriber. Maybe you share a personal story about how you started your business, or you could also share a podcast episode that you did where you share a personal story. The fourth email, I recommend that you remind your subscriber about the lead magnet, because that's what got them into your email list in the first place. So you want to ask them if they were able to check it out, if they're able to get any fun quick wins from it, or if they have any feedback about your lead magnet as well. And then that fifth email, I recommend that you share an offer of yours. It could be a paid offer, like a course or a popular service that you provide, or it could be a free offer, like a free Facebook group or to check out your podcast. So that's kind of a quick outline of 5 different emails that you can send out after somebody subscribes to your list and downloads your lead magnet.
Oh my gosh, that was so good. I feel like anybody that is like driving in the car or with their kids needs to like pause this and run and grab a pencil and like rewind because that was amazing. And we'll definitely be sure to outline that in the show notes for you guys so that you can go back and refer to that email sequence. And I feel like too, that's definitely something that is super tangible, and you don't have to create a lot of new content in order to get that welcome series set up. And I also feel like that's something that you can probably do in an afternoon. Even just thinking about myself and my own business, I'm like, oh, I need to add some of those into our welcome sequence, because that is such a good tidbit, especially the part about, you know, serving and then bringing it full circle with whatever paid offer you have. I love that so much. So, okay, let's say somebody's like, all right, I've got my lead magnet. I set up my welcome series. Now I need to start growing this email list because I blasted it out to my initial audience. I had an okay subscriber rate, but I'm really looking to increase my overall list. Do you have any like tips or strategies around how someone can grow their list effectively, but also make sure that they're finding the right people to be on their list too?
Oh yeah, that's so important about getting the right people, Amanda. So some tips I have for growing your email list and sharing your lead magnet. Number one, I know that when we first create our lead magnets and write our welcome email sequence, we're really excited to launch it. But after we spent some time creating it, we forget to share it with our audience again. So I think it's important to keep sharing it. If you could do it weekly through your content, then do that. Also include the landing page on your website, maybe after a piece of content that you've written, like a blog post. You can also grow your email list by expanding your visibility. So pitching podcasts, speaking at different summits. Another way that you can grow your email list is doing a freebie swap. So let's say, Amanda, that I share my lead magnet with you and you share it with your audience. You could also share your lead magnet with me and I can share it with my audience as well. So that's a freebie swap. And also another way that you could grow your email list is through paid ads. I normally don't recommend this when somebody is starting out, but if you feel like you've capped out your audience and you're wanting to get new people to learn more about you, that is a great way to go as well.
Oh my gosh, those are so good. Okay, so many great tips and strategies there. I love the first one that you said right off the back, which is continuing to share it over and over again, because a lot of times I think we like spend all this time, like you said, creating it, and then we share it once and then we're done.
Yeah.
Like so often, you know, one, especially if we're sharing on social media, only like 2% of your audience is seeing your content anyway. So the other 98% may not have even seen you share it the first time, or they were distracted or didn't have time to click over and sign up, or they weren't in the right headspace or whatever that looks like. So continuing to reshare that, I think in different ways is so valuable too. I also love what you said about if you have a website, integrating it multiple places on your website, whether that's like a banner at the top or a slide up or a pop-up or like you said, even within a blog post, I think those are all really great options. And then I think the one that stood out most too is the collaboration one. I think it's so smart to be able to collaborate with other people in your industry, especially if, you know, you guys are in a similar space, but maybe you don't do the same exact thing. Like you said, doing a freebie swap, I feel like is really beneficial because one, you're able to provide value that you may not be 100% expertise in to your audience while still serving them and vice versa. I think that's so cool. So if somebody was looking to do, let's say, a freebie swap, how would you advise them going about that? Would they shoot that person an email, reach out on Instagram? Like, what would that look like for them if somebody's maybe a little bit intimidated to reach out and initiate that?
Oh, yeah. I think that reaching out through a social media platform like Instagram is really helpful, Amanda. And I also think it's important to keep in mind, too, the person that you end up reaching out to, is their lead magnet going to help your audience? And is your lead magnet going to help their audience, too? Because you definitely want the lead magnet to, like as we talked about earlier, it's giving your subscribers a quick win. So you want to be able to give your subscribers a quick win through somebody's lead magnet and vice versa. So I think establishing relationships through Instagram is helpful, and sending a DM through Facebook groups as well. Sometimes even within Facebook groups, a moderator or Facebook group owner will let you share your lead magnet, and maybe you see somebody's lead magnet within that Facebook thread that could be really helpful for your audience. I think it would be great if you reached out to them through email or through a message. So those are my tips.
I love that. And I sometimes forget about Facebook groups, even though I am part of so many of them. But that's another great place to find people too, is within Facebook groups. And there's so many different niche ones that I feel like you can join. You just like type in that search bar and tons will pop up for whatever you're looking for too. I love that. That's so fun. Okay, so we know that email marketing can be wildly powerful, but I feel like sometimes it's that blank cursor is staring back at us. And, you know, you were like sitting there, like trying to come up with, okay, now that I have all of this set in place, what do I even send my list? What are some tips you have for crafting emails that really resonate with your audience? And like, how do you determine what like a quote unquote good email is to send?
Oh, yeah. I love this question, Amanda, because as a copywriter, sometimes people might think that we're really good at writing and we're writing all the time. And I find it easier at least to write for my clients because I have prompts to work with. But when it comes to writing for my audience, it can be a struggle. And I've definitely had my fair share of blinking cursor moments. So as far as some tips, number one, I think that it's important to think about the goal of just one email that you want to send out. I know earlier we talked about having one big goal for your email marketing and your email marketing strategy. When it comes to one email, what's one goal that you want it to do? Do you want to try to sell your course? Are you trying to share good news? Maybe you want to promote a podcast episode or a blog post that you wrote. So first think about that big goal that you have. Then number two would be to write down that goal first. So for example, if you're trying to sell your course, you can write down the call to action first within the email, so for them to purchase the course. And I feel like once you have at least that written down, there's something at least on the page and can help motivate you to write even more. So the third step I have when it comes to the blinking cursor syndrome is to think about how you want your audience to feel whenever they read your email. Do you want them to feel motivated, inspired? Maybe you want them to reflect for a moment. And you can write down that feeling. Then think about a time in your life when you felt this emotion. And the fifth step would be to write down a story that kind of ties in with that emotion that you had felt. And this is where storytelling comes in when it comes to writing your emails. So you end up writing up that story. So I think that a lot of times we're pressured to write down something that's perfect, but to always remember that you can go back and you can edit things within your story that you're writing down, making sure things flow better. But to get things on paper is the first step, or in your Google Docs is the first step. Now, sometimes I know for myself, I could feel really stuck sometimes. So another thing that you could do is you could download somebody else's lead magnet with specific prompts. You could invest in an email marketing membership where somebody sends you a prompt every week. Personally, for me, what I like to do with my list is I like to send out at least a monthly newsletter. So throughout the month, I have a note within my phone where I'm putting in links for specific blog posts that I've read or podcast episodes that I listen to that I know would be helpful for my subscribers. And then I could send out those links within one email. Because I think sometimes we think that we have to have a lot of words in our email in order to send them out. But just providing value in small ways by sending two or three links could be beneficial to our subscribers, because it's all about establishing a relationship with them. You could also keep a journal or note within your phone where you're keeping track of different stories in your life. So I know I mentioned a tip would be to think about an emotion that you felt and a time where you felt that emotion. So you could keep track of these stories and use them within your storytelling emails in the future. So those are just some tips I have to get rid of that blank cursor syndrome.
Oh my gosh, those are all so good. And I'm definitely going to steal the one about the note in my phone, because I feel like sometimes inspiration strikes at the most random times when I'm not always ready to like whip up an email and sit down. And I think that's such a great tip. Now, I know you mentioned that at the very least, you send an email at least once a month. What do you feel like is a good amount of emails to strive for? I know some people are like very intimidated by sending more than one email per week or per month. Have you found that there's kind of like a happy place of how often we should be emailing?
Yeah, so I think that depends on the subscribers. Like sometimes people are really busy, so they might not like it if you're sending a lot of emails. I typically find that sending at least two emails a month is really helpful, especially with my clients and their subscribers. But if you're feeling even intimidated by that, just committing to sending one monthly email is helpful. And then once you gain consistency with that, you can start adding even more emails throughout the week.
I love that. And now, do you recommend a specific day or time? Or is that something that you would say maybe they should pull their audience? Like if they're, you know, wanting to receive emails on, let's say, Saturday mornings or Monday afternoons, how would you advise somebody knowing when to send an email? Or is that something that we test in the beginning and look at the data and see?
Oh yeah, I know I've read a few blogs, Amanda, and they mentioned that it's great to send emails on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Those two dates, I'm not really sure why. I think it's more important to actually test things out with your list to see when people are opening, if people are clicking links within your email. And it's also going to depend on your target audience as well. So for example, if your target audience is maybe you're trying to help somebody in corporate America to start their business, maybe sending out emails throughout the week, they're not really checking their email as much, or at least their personal email, than if it was the weekend. So maybe sending out emails during the weekend would be more helpful for that specific audience. So I think asking them and testing things out is most important thing to do.
Yeah, I love that advice. It's so important to think about like that end user and thinking, okay, when are they actually going to be grabbing their phone? Maybe it's like you said, like after work or early morning or maybe on their lunch break. That's so helpful. Okay, so I feel like you've given us so much good knowledge already, but I know that we have even more to dive into. So I know one of your strengths is largely based on being a copy strategist, but within that, really doing research on why it is that we're writing specific copy. So why do you think it's important when thinking about whether it's launch copy or email copy or sales copy to do a little bit of research on the back end and walk us through like what that would look like?
Oh yeah, sure. So when we think about our lives in general, we're all kind of researchers. For example, like if you want to try out a new restaurant, you're probably going to do your research and read some reviews before going. If you want to find a new doctor to see, you're going to read reviews about them. And even scientists like my background before, we're constantly doing experiments, but we're not getting that result that we want the first time. So it's important for us to do experiments to gather data so that we can tweak future experiments to get the results that we want. So when it comes to launches, I think there's a lot of pressure because we're seeing maybe 6- and 7-figure business owners having really successful launches. But these people probably started off doing a launch that wasn't successful at first. But what they did was they launched their offer. Maybe it wasn't successful, but they're able to get data from that launch. Just like we do research in our everyday lives, they're able to tweak some things and then their offer is stronger and they're able to have a successful launch in the future. So I think thinking about launches as kind of like an experiment kind of takes the pressure off of us. So when it comes to specifically launches and sales copy, a lot of people think copywriting is just writing, but I tell people that copywriting is 80% research and 20% writing. Because one of the main goals that copy has is to really join the conversation that your audience is having in their head. So you want to know, what are they struggling with? What goals do they have? How do they learn best? And could your offer specifically help them with those struggles that they're facing? So it's really important to gather this data so you're creating a strong offer for them. So you can ask them specifically. You could also do market research through Facebook groups or Reddit groups, just to continue to gather data so you're creating a strong offer and writing copy that really connects with your audience.
I love that. And it's so important, like you said, to really kind of get inside their head and think about, okay, what's that inner dialogue that they're having? What are their hesitations? What motivates them? What might be hanging them up a little bit where they feel stuck or they can't take action? And really infusing that into the copy. So if someone was looking, let's say, to do a little bit of research, I know you mentioned that like popping into Facebook or Reddit groups or even having like a conversation one-on-one with them. Have you found that one way is better than another, or do you have like a strategy around really what that research portion looks like and then how you take that and infuse it into the copy?
Yeah, sure, Amanda. So when I work with my clients, the first thing I like to do is to give them a survey that they can send to their email subscribers, asking them about their pain points, maybe what they think about their offers. And it's really important to send out surveys to people who have gone through maybe that course or that offer that my client sold, and people who decided not to invest. So that's just a quick survey that they can take. And we don't want to overwhelm the person too. So making sure that there's not a lot of questions. The last question, though, that I recommend my clients have is to ask people if they would be willing to speak with them on a one-on-one call to just ask them a little bit more about their responses. So I would say having those one-on-one conversations is the most helpful because you could really sense people's emotions. You could ask them questions to get to know what they're struggling with and also the wins that they celebrated too. So I would say audience research is a lot stronger. Market research can be as well, especially if you're trying to create a new offer. But if somebody already has an established audience, I think asking people within the audience would be the most beneficial thing to do.
Yeah. And what a great way to use your email list, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. I'm like, you already have those people there. Just shoot them an email. Okay. So I know you mentioned a survey. What sort of questions would you recommend including in that survey? Let's say that somebody is looking to either pull their audience, or maybe it's, like you said, for a client on behalf of their audience. And, you know, maybe somebody's coming up with the survey for that client. Maybe what's like 2 or 3 questions that are like, okay, yes, definitely include these in the survey to make sure you're getting to the meat and root of what exactly it is that we're trying to get out of the purpose of the survey.
Oh, yeah. So the survey questions will depend if you're sending it to people who purchased your offer. So let's say that somebody purchased your offer and you're wanting to ask them some questions. I think it's important to ask, number one, what was the main struggle that you were going through that led you to investing in my product? That way you can get the specific pain points and scenario that they were going through. And I think it's important too to ask them what specific wins do they have through that product or course that you offered. And this can also act as a testimonial for you that you can include in your emails and your other pieces of copy. If you want to survey people who haven't invested in your offer, or maybe they even went through your whole sales email sequence and they decided not to invest, I think it's important to ask why they decided not to invest in the first place. Maybe they felt like your copy was a little confusing, or they didn't really understand that big win that they were going to achieve. And I think getting that data can help make your copy stronger and also your offer stronger as well.
That is so helpful. And I love that first part that you said too, thinking about what led them initially to your product, whether they purchased or they didn't purchase, because either way, I feel like that's such valuable information. It's great if they purchased, and we obviously want them to, but of course you're going to have those people that decide not to purchase. And I feel like having that information is always helpful, because I know, speaking from experience, sometimes it's not always a no, like I'm not going to purchase. It's a no, not right now. And that could be, like you said, because maybe the copy was confusing, or maybe we need to tweak the offer. But it could also be because they're not in the right mental space, which is totally fine, because that tells you that you can continue to serve them in other ways through sending out your regular emails and any other content that you might be producing. And that may be a case where you can send them an email back that says, like, no worries, I totally understand. Here's some free resources that I have that might help you in the meantime. And I feel like that right there gives them so much value, so that when they are ready to invest, they think of you to come back to, and you're staying top of mind for them, which I think is so awesome. And just having that information, I think, is helpful in helping you guide your decision, like you said, to be able to tweak the copy or tweak the offer, or maybe change something on your website. Maybe like the button wasn't big enough or bright enough or clear enough or whatever.
Yeah, definitely true. I feel like we're constantly gathering data, Amanda, and also serving our audience. And I love what you said about they might not have said yes right now, but they could say yes in the future.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think about myself personally as a consumer. There have been plenty of times where I come across something and I'm like, oh, that's really cool. Let me like bookmark that for later. Or I feel like that's going to be helpful for me when I'm in this phase, but I'm not quite there yet. And then if that person continues to provide value and sends emails when I am ready to buy, again, like they're top of mind. So I'm not usually going to go with somebody else that I just met. I'll probably go with that first person that has been serving me for like a year straight with free content when I am ready to buy a paid product.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I can definitely relate to that.
So, okay, tell us maybe like a couple quick tips for writing copy that converts, whether that's like an email or on a website or even like social media. What are like your go-to, if you could just give three tips as a copywriter to everybody, what would they be?
Oh yeah. So the first tip that I would have is to write like you talk. So I know we talked about earlier about having that blinking cursor syndrome. Another way that you can combat that is by just hitting record, maybe opening up Zoom, hitting record, or opening up a voice memo, hitting record, and just talking. Record yourself, maybe sharing a tip that you want to share with your audience. And also, I recommend, if maybe you don't want to record yourself, you're better at writing things out first, to write out your copy and then to read it out loud. And ask yourself, does it sound like you? If not, you can tweak things a bit. So that's my first tip, to write like you talk. Another copy tip that I have, this goes well with social media and also your subject lines, is so on Instagram, LinkedIn, and I think even Facebook, if you write out a caption, somebody needs to click show more or read more in order for them to see the whole caption that you've written. So I think it's great to have some sort of hook so that they read the caption where you're providing value for them or sharing some good news to them. And also having a hook as your subject line is important so that people are reading your emails as well. So great hook could be maybe a question, it could be a fun fact, or one word that surprises them, and that can get them to read your caption or emails. And I'd say the third tip I have when it comes to copywriting is to stay true to your values. I know that there's a lot of talk about ethical marketing within the marketing space. I don't think that there's a set definition for it, but I think it's important, especially when it comes to copy, that you're being honest. So definitely don't recommend lying about like the number of seats that are available in your program, or maybe you decide to close your course, but you leave it open so that people can still get in. I think it's important to stay true to your values and to be honest. So those are three tips that I have for writing copy that converts.
Ooh, I love that. And the one about the hook, I forget about that sometimes. I mean, you think about that with the subject line, of course, for an email. But to your point, when you're thinking about social media, you're right. You do have to click show more to see that full caption. So getting that hook in the beginning of the caption, the same way you would put a hook in the subject line of an email, is so smart. And I love that. And that's so easy for our listeners to be able to implement literally today, right now, if they're writing their social media posts up for later this afternoon. I love that. Okay, so that made me think of a follow-up question. When we're thinking about subject lines for emails, I feel like this can be kind of tricky because you don't want to be like clickbaity where you're, like you said, not being ethical. But at the same time, you want to make sure that your emails are being open. Do you have a specific strategy around coming up with a good subject line that still conveys what the email's about, but makes people want to open it?
Oh, yeah. So what I normally do is I write the email out first, and then I think about maybe a specific part of the email. Maybe there's a theme or a question that ties into what I wrote, and I put that as the subject line. Now, when it comes to emails too, it's important to do something called A/B testing. So you could test out one subject line, send that email to a certain number of subscribers, and actually see, are people opening it? If not, maybe it's a good idea to tweak that subject line and then send it out to the rest of your subscribers. Or maybe you sent out an email to your subscribers. People didn't open it. Maybe it was because of your subject line. So you could tweak that subject line and resend it to see if people actually open it. That would be my tip for getting your emails opened.
That is such a good tip. I love that you write the email first and then come up with the subject line. So I feel like most people, they start at the top. So they're like, okay, who am I sending this to? And here's the subject. And then they write the body. But working backwards, I think makes so much more sense because once you have the email written, you already know what's inside and then you can do the subject line. I love that. And I love the idea for A/B testing. I know ConvertKit makes this super easy to do if you're using ConvertKit. There's a bunch of other platforms out there too, but that one just always pops up top of mind. But if you're using like a free email software or like even Flowdesk, theirs is very easy. If you're doing a resend to anybody that unopened the email, that you can still change the subject line and see if maybe that's why they didn't open it in the first place, is because it didn't grab them or whatever. Okay, that's so good. I seriously feel like this episode is like a tiny mini course in copywriting and email sequence that like everybody should take.
Oh, thanks, Amanda. Yeah, I had so much fun chatting about email marketing and copy with you.
Honestly, I feel like I could chat about it all day long because it's like one of those things that I'll totally nerd out over. So I know that people are going to want to find you online, follow you online. Tell us where everybody can find you, follow you, any free resources that you might have, all the things.
Oh, yeah. So I am mainly active on Instagram, and my handle is @copywithkim. You can also find me on my website, copywithkim.com. And there I have a sell before you launch email edition checklist. So it's basically 10 different things that you can use after you write your email sequence. You can check these things off to be sure that your emails are getting opened by your subscribers. And I also include 4 different email templates there, basically an email template to help you with a launch that you're going to be having. So that's at copywithkim.com.
Oh, that is awesome. I need to go grab that free resource today because that sounds so helpful. Thank you so much. This has been so fun. I can't wait to have you on again. We can dive into even more email marketing and copy tips. And again, thank you.
Thank you so much, Amanda.
I'm over here doing a little happy dance because you just finished another episode of the Bold Business Podcast. Is it just me, or was that filled to the brim with juicy goodness? If you're anything like me and are wanting even more business, marketing, and strategy tips coupled with real life, follow along with us over on Instagram at the Bold Business Podcast. And be sure to check out the show notes for any free resources, links mentioned, or coupon codes and more. And if you loved this episode, will you do me a favor and go ahead and tap that subscribe button and leave us a review? Until next time, and remember, let's be bold together.